Hi everyone, it's Adam from Monkey Tennis here. Just saying a huge thank you to all of you that have supported my charity appeal so far. For those that haven't heard about it, this September I'm going to be swimming 15 kilometres between five islands in Cornwall. I'll be swimming the Isles of Scilly, that's Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. I'm doing it because I want to, but also to raise money for CALM, the campaign against living miserably. It's a well-known statistic that 125 people in the UK die by suicide every week, and CALM run a free and confidential helpline for people to speak through their problems and ultimately to help prevent suicides. I'm looking to raise enough money to train two new phone workers to man those lines, and I'll be doing it by swimming the Isles of Scilly in Cornwall. If you're looking to support me, it would be greatly appreciated. You can donate at justgiving.com. Just go there and search for Adam Swim Scilly. That's Adam Swim Scilly, S-C-I-L-L-Y. All donations greatly appreciated. Thank you for helping me to support CALM. And now, on with Monkey Tennis.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Monkey Tennis?
It's knowing me, knowing you with Alan Partridge.
And Christ.
Monkey Tennis?
Please, please don't take my chat away from me.
The cracker's on fire above the pool!
Monkey Tennis?
My house is open, my mock-up house.
Monkey Tennis?
That is a very nice action.
Oh, pardon?
Monkey Tennis?
300k. 300k all we take is a sky.
3 years ago, hobnobs were probably the number one biscuit.
Aha!
Monkey Tennis?
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Prince Charles Cinema in London's glamorous Leicester Square and to Monkey Tennis Live, in which four idiots discuss, dissect and celebrate Alan's Christmas special, Knowing Me, Knowing Yule, approximately 3 weeks before it's appropriate to do so. Later, we'll also be welcoming to the stage Simon Greenall, polymath, actor, meerkat, and most importantly, Michael. A lot has happened since we were here last year looking at Alpha Papa. Armando Iannucci has released his most successful movie to date in the form of The Death of Stalin. Steve Coogan has won a BAFTA for Scissored Isle. And we've watched our listener numbers gradually decline week on week. That said, word has got around since we topped the iTunes chart that we're the go-to podcasters for professional, masterful broadcasting and crisp, clear pronunciation, as you're about to hear.
Greetings, Alan aficionados and Lynn lovers, and welcome to Monkey Tennis, the Alan Partridge fan podcast.
Hello, everyone.
I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Sorry, should I?
At Swollen Danube.
I should have read that before.
Do you want to just start the whole...
Yeah, I will. Yeah. Swollen Danube.
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 Is it Danube or Danube? I don't know.
It's Danube. It's the name of a river.
Is that's what it is, yeah.
Swollen Danube. What's a Danube?
Flatly, my dear. I don't give a Danube.
I'm going to struggle saying
Danube.
Danube. No, but I think I'm going to laugh when I say it. Swollen Danube.
No, you don't pronounce the B, surely. Is
yeah, you do. What river is it?
It's in...
And staying on a Knowing Me, Knowing You tip, we've got a tweet from at Swollen Danube.
Sorry.
On another Knowing Me, Knowing You tip, we had a message on Twitter.
Who's from?
Without further ado, audience, please make some noise. And Alexa, please play pre-recorded applause tape as we welcome the hosts of Monkey Tennis. everyone, and welcome to Monkey Tennis Live. I'm Adam Brooks, and I'm joined by Tom Dark.
Please don't take my chat away from me.
Nick Holder.
We had great times in the Vauxhall Labrador.
And Tom Stab.
300k or we take it to Sky.
So, it's like we rehearsed.
We have a bit.
We're here to talk all about Knowing Me, Knowing You, Alan's festive special, which, to be fair, a date like this is about 3 weeks too soon, as we said. But let's plough on. Where is Alan at this stage in his life?
He's not a great place.
We last saw him shooting a man live on air.
Live on air, yep.
So that's where he's at.
So this should go fine, right? This should be okay. Yeah.
What could possibly go wrong?
As they explained, the only reason this special comes about is because of a contractual obligation, which I think in real life, when you kill a man, it's over.
Probably wouldn't have happened.
No, isn't it?
I've got a little quote from iPartridge that adds a bit more to this. He says, "And with an internal inquiry into the regrettable death of Forbes McAllister still ongoing, I had yet to be deemed culpable of anything."
So it's all fine. It's all fine.
It seems fair.
So should we give the genuine context of this? Is this Christmas special aired on the 29th of December 1995. And as you can see, it actually was recorded on the 19th of November 1995. So not too far away from here, bar 22 years. But yeah, I think in terms of the Alan universe, as we like to call it, that all ties in. So he also wrote in iPartridge, Carol had left on Christmas Eve 1995. Knowing Me, Knowing You was to be broadcast 5 days later. And you think, why would you have a Christmas special 5 days after Christmas? It seems a bit odd.
That's a good point, actually.
I don't suppose there's any sort of credence to the rumour that it was meant to be around Christmas, but then Carol left him on Christmas Eve and suddenly, boo-hoo, he's had to postpone it a little bit.
I don't think the BBC work like that, to be honest with you.
No, fair enough.
The schedules are done very far in advance.
Fair enough.
They've buried it, haven't they? They've buried it in the listings.
Yep. So does this mean that Carol potentially has had a wonderful, warm and well-filled Christmas with her narcissistic sports pimp lover?
You can only assume so.
Yeah. If Alan's had the worst Christmas ever, we can assume she's had the best Christmas
Lots
ever.
Of yellow stuff in tins for his Christmas.
Yeah, exactly.
That makes sense. And would you like some real-life context around this?
More than anything.
Yeah, setting the scene of 1995... At the time this show originally aired, the number one single was Michael Jackson, Earth Song.
Banger.
The number one album was by Robson and Jerome. And the number one film at the box office was Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls.
Oh, that's 3 out of 3, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. It's all gold, isn't it? It's all great. Yeah.
Something for everyone. The DVD menu, that's always a good place to start.
Not if I only watched it on Netflix.
We'll get into that later, yeah.
Let me explain it to you. It features an excerpt of Hucknall looped, so if you want endless Mick Hucknall.
Who doesn't want that?
Yep.
Everyone.
Yeah. Well, we'll probably talk about him in a bit as well.
Alan has a festive hat and snow superimposed on him, and the instruction to hit the play on the episode just says, play Yule.
Yeah, great. It's good.
It really
it's
is good. The start of Christmas. Fuck Starbucks cups. Fuck John Lewis adverts.
This
when
is
you
it.
Press play on
so
Yule.
So you're saying Christmas starts now, starts today.
Literally now. Yeah. Why
we've
you
officially
think bought 100
Christmas.
Crackers?
Yeah.
So just the other note to add to this. So what you see on the screen here, that is a genuine invitation to the be in the audience for when this is filmed. And it was filmed at Teddington Studios. Minor point of geeky interest. The rest of Knowing Me, Knowing You was filmed at TV Centre, so where the BBC is, but this was filmed at Teddington, so that is different.
Just a minor point of geeky interest.
Just a minor point of geeky
interest.
Good knowledge.
Some people will care.
Some people will.
What? not you, I'm taking it. Yeah.
What were we doing in 1995? Should we cover that?
God. Yeah. Being at school?
Yeah, I think I was probably at school.
I don't have anything else apart from that.
I mean, much like Alan, this was very much my tie and blazer badge combination years, going to a grammar school in Torquay, so yeah. Very similar in a lot of ways. You know?
I mean, did you have anything of interest?
I just thought there might be something interesting to find out. But
he never does.
No. Should we...
Let's crack into it.
Let's do this.
It's off to a touching start outside BBC TV Centre, where a nervous choir boy is singing the theme until Alan interjects with aha, instilled with Christmas spirit.
I think at this point as well, is it worth touching on the distinctions between the versions? Because I've only watched the Netflix version.
Explain.
Same
for Stab.
Yep.
But Adam and Tom, you've seen the DVD version, which is critically different.
Yeah, because we're considerably older.
That critical difference is that this scene does not happen in the Netflix version.
So I think we worked out there's about 5 or 6 minutes that don't exist on the Netflix version.
Yeah. You're very much choir boy deficient.
Yeah, and just to go back to my minor point in geekiness earlier, the fact being it was filmed at Teddington, but look, he's outside TV Centre there. That's a lie. You can't believe everything you see on TV. Unbelievable. And in this is only a short intro sequence, and in this, Alan talks about some of the meanings of Christmas. He lists things like a scared animal, an orphan being in a shed, or a gypsy stealing food. Yeah. Alan's got an interesting take on Christmas, you've got to be honest.
That's the first laugh of the episode as well. Yeah, things that Christmas is. Yeah. Little Robin Redbreast petrified by the wind, an orphan in a blanket being helped into a shed.
Doesn't sound good.
Yeah. A snowman whose nose carrot has been stolen and subsequently eaten by a gypsy thief.
Nose carrot!
And then finally, me, Stanley, three stunning hostesses, some Santa chat, and quality poultry.
Now that sounds better. That sounds like the sort of TV show.
I'd argue you don't get all of those, do you? And the quality poultry, spoiler alert, ends up being plunged into two people's faces. So
Yeah, I mean, if that's much of a spoiler, then I think this whole thing is going to be a bit disappointing if people haven't. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, why are you here? Anyway, I shouldn't question that.
One thing I did notice about the choir boy is that he's shit. If you listen to him trying to sing Knowing Me, Knowing You, for starters, he says Laha instead of Aha, which is a cardinal sin in Partridge Universe.
Well, I mean, I feel like you're being a bit hard on that. Well, he's only a young lad.
Yeah,
you know?
Not anymore. He's probably beat me up now. He also says there is a thing we can do. There is nothing we can do. It's ABBA, for God's sake. He's ruined Christmas, and we're only 2 minutes in.
But where's my card?
Oh,
is that the joke?
Is that the joke?
It might be the joke.
we say this so much now that we didn't actually print cards.
It's split opinion, but yeah.
Who has 6 minutes on That's the Joke to be played?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're being a bit hard on him. I mean, but to be honest, I mean, I was never a choir boy at school or anything. And my opening question to the group, I was wondering, has anybody ever been a choir boy or anything like that? I mean,
not outside the odd Christmas carols.
No. Interestingly, I've done a bit of digging, and you might be wondering, who's that young chap in the middle there?
Fuck.
Oh, who's that? I wonder who that could be. Should we zoom in a bit? Should we zoom into that?
Look at that.
It's our very own Tom Snab.
Look at him with his off the shoulder look like a motherfucking gangster.
Very cool.
Cassock is the correct technical term, I think you'll find. And that is hanging off my shoulder like a gangster.
I wouldn't know. I wasn't a choir boy.
What age were you in that photo, out of interest?
Say again?
What age were you in that photo?
Oh, I would have been about 8, I reckon.
How long did you stick at the choir game for?
Until I was about 13, 14. So thanks, Mum and Dad, for sending that in. I didn't know that was going to happen. Brilliant. Well done.
Not a problem.
Thanks for dropping me right in.
Appreciated.
Okay, should we move back into Alan now again?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, we're on to the credits at this point? Oh, we skipped past the credits on the screen behind us. So the theme is Christmased up as the credits roll. It's basically, it's more or less the theme of the Knowing Me, Knowing You, isn't it? Until the very end, when they just heap a load of digital snow on it and hope for the best. And there's obviously the seasonal addition to the theme tune that we all heard as we came in tonight.
I mean, on paper, there's no reason why it shouldn't work. The template was popular. There was, special guests. It's Christmas. Yep. Everything was laid out perfectly to go to plan. But brace yourself for the fact that it might not.
Armando Iannucci on the commentary claims that the fake snow that was at the start of this episode cost $50,000. So I checked.
What?
I know.
That's bullshit.
I checked with someone who worked on Christmas commercials, including one with a lot of fake snow in it, and you're looking at about £500 a day if you want a winter wonderland in your own home.
Okay.
They probably needed them for one day. So
exactly.
He's lied. He's lied to us on the commentary there. We've got Alan's bracing intro here as he comes through the door of his mock-up house, and
he can't stress that enough, and he will go on to stress.
Well, did anybody make a note of how many times he refers to his mock-up house?
No.
He mentions it 7 times in a few different permutations.
Reasonable.
That's an average of about once every 5 minutes. Yeah. So just to make sure that you know what you're getting.
It's a running theme of Alan, isn't it? That accuracy is key above all else. Yeah. Like, he would have a nice little show here if he just explained to people, this is my house, here we go. But no, he has to tell you it's mock-up. He also has to say it's fake snow, a polyurethane composite, rather than just letting the illusion of Christmas wash over you.
Has to stress that.
Did all the guests on the screen there?
Did anyone clock as well what weapon he sort of mimes as his...
His assault on the audience in this episode is archery.
Yeah,
we've previously seen grenades, I think rocket launchers, etc. Yeah. So it goes up and down in its ferociousness.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need.
Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And at this point, he starts to run down the guests, does he not?
It's probably worth mentioning as well, the opening puns in this show are chatalogue and chategorically.
Quite good.
So
double pun
for the Christmas special, obviously. Mm-hmm. Go on.
He runs down a list of guests, and at the end is the bombshell that Mick Hucknall is going to be on the show.
The star guest.
I remember seeing this for the first time and treating that with a lot of cynicism after being promised Roger Moore, and during an afternoon with Alan Partridge, Sue Cook, both of which failed to appear. So
yeah, well, Sue Cook did the same thing to us, didn't she?
Sue Cook stood us up this time last year. She sent us a very nice letter, which you can listen to in the Alpha Papa special.
It's Mick Hucknall is the only genuine real life person to appear in an Alan show like that, isn't he?
Well, I think these are all real people.
Well, yes,
actors.
But I mean, okay, Mick Hucknall appearing as himself in that case, yes.
Granted. Anyone have anything in particular on his rundown of the other guests?
They're slightly unremarkable. I mean, a TV commissioner as a guest.
Using that to his own end.
Almost like he's got an ulterior motive for having Tony Hayes on, isn't it?
I mean, I don't know about some of the extras that are behind him. So as you move on, there is a man sitting on the sofa behind him as he's introducing the guests on the show. And if we get to the slide
there he is.
It's that guy. Looks a little bit like Armando Iannucci, I thought. And then listening to the commentary, they all said the same thing. And it turns out that is actually the set designer's brother. And he's chatting. To this series is casting director.
Nice.
There we go.
So you do learn useful things in commentaries, kind of.
I also thought it's worth noting that it takes just 2 minutes 40, and this is on the Netflix version, that's crucial, for the words child pornography to be used.
Was anyone else
shocked by that?
Merry Christmas, everyone. Yeah. just a quick thing, on the commentary, there's a lot of people who are obviously involved, acted in. There's the guy who plays Glenn Ponder, there's Rebecca Front, Armando Iannucci, and so on. Notably absent, as he often is from commentaries, is Steve Coogan. And the reason Armando gives for Alan not being there is that he's had to go home. He's just found out he's got bats.
They give like a really random excuse on each episode because clearly he just couldn't be bothered to turn up to the commentary recording.
Yep, not interested.
I mean, he might have been too busy, but I won't accept that.
It's also at this point that we find out that Alan's house was broken into over the 6 consecutive weeks
He was burgled every single week.
Broken into every week.
And I did enjoy just, you get a nice switching, so he talks about that and basically threatens the burglars with violence and then moves on to meet the bell ringers of Norwich Cathedral.
Yeah, but crucially as well, it's not violence that he can enact, this is violence that he's paid someone to do on his behalf, which is quite a classic Alan thing to do.
Hiring the mercenaries
when shit goes dirty work.
That's Mike and Ted from Securacore. Can you remember the name of the two Alsatian dogs?
Oh, it's Tintin and Pickles.
Should have known you would have that in your notes. That was an absolute guarantee.
There's no notes.
Blank screen here.
Yeah. So popping on to is the next slide is one of the key guests throughout the episode.
Mary.
I believe. Mary.
Yep.
There she is.
There she is.
So, yeah, I thought she's basically dressed like Snow White. Disney Snow White there. Mary talks to Alan about the birth of Jesus Christ our Saviour, and Alan just responds, fair enough. He does not give a shit about the religious aspect behind Christmas whatsoever, which is quite evident.
She's really pushing the religion angle. Yeah. I say angle, religion angle. It's unfair. It's Christmas after all. But she's really pushing that throughout the episode, and he's very resistant, isn't he?
Well, to be fair to him, she has derailed that conversation slightly, even though he feels the need to say, you know, keep it light. That is a fair thing to say. Like, you wouldn't want to take the conversation down that route, surely.
Well, not within the first 3 minutes of the show.
She's already gone on about religion. Well, she's mentioned child porn
pornography. Yeah. Who's invited this person?
She's top pushing your Christ agenda on this show.
Yeah. I mean, arguably, that's Pear Tree Productions failing, if anything, that they've invited bad guests. Point, so he's only got himself to blame.
So in his attempt to try and get her back on track, he says, you know, keep it light. This is, have you seen Noel's house party? This is a lot like that. So that's very much the basis for this.
Yeah, so what I thought was interesting, at this point, I think you could argue that Alan very much aspires to be a Noel Edmonds level of entertainer, which I know sounds ridiculous these days. But then I thought, if you get back to kind of Nomad era, so the kind of most recent bit of Partridge we've had, he describes Edmonds as a total wazzock of a guy. So I thought, at what point does it all go wrong there? So another question.
Oh, hang on. What's this? Yeah.
This is a spoiler.
Well, we've jumped ahead a little bit here.
But hey.
Another question to the group. Which I think we know the answer. Has anyone ever appeared on Noel's house party in any form?
No, I have not appeared on Noel's house
I know
party.
I haven't. Nick, have you?
I have absolute not. Absolute barrel of pricks.
Well, there we go. I've done a bit of digging. So we've got a Wazzock on the left and I wonder who that young chap circled on the right might be.
I think we need a zoom.
Should we zoom in?
There he is.
Oh, look. It's our very own Adam Brooks as seen on Noel's house party.
Oh. I used to grow hair back then.
Adam, do you want to describe it? Do you want to talk us through what was going on there?
What was the feature you were on? Because I reckon people that watched it in the 90s
the
will
feature
remember.
I was on was Wait Till I Get You Home, where they basically
sinister
get, they basically grind. Yeah.
In that day and age as well,
it's about to get a whole lot worse. So they ask you questions about your parents and then you grass your parents up and then they sort of ask them what they think you said and then you get a load of prizes or not based on that.
What prizes did you get actually?
They were not the cream of the crop. I got an ice cream maker. I got a Noel Edmonds
Ooh.
Garden gnome. a cow butter dish. and I got a set of oil paints, but the
no child wants oil paints, surely.
There were two things about this experience that were very disillusioning. One is that the guy after me basically grassed his parents up for having a sex tape under their bed. And that
amazing.
As a reminder, this used to go out on BBC One in the 90s to about 18 million people. So,
I have raided the Wikipedia facts archive here.
Before you get to that,
so we can get to that.
The most crushing thing about being on Noel's house party was I was at one point handed a signed photo of Mr. Blobby, and firstly,
I'm worried about this.
We've all seen Mr. Blobby's hands. Where's the dexterity required to grasp a pencil and sign your name in font about this big? And
very good
also,
point.
They'd also embellished it with a handprint, which was probably about the size of the top of this bottle of water. So I don't know who he's got doing his dirty work, but no, I didn't know.
Did you even get to meet Blobby?
He wasn't in my segment.
Where did he have crinkly bottom?
Well, if you want,
that's got a bit of a sinister sound to it as well.
You're listening to the Noel's House Party podcast.
If you really wanted to meet Mr. Blobby, you could just go to the Crinkly Bottom theme park, which apparently nobody did.
Oh yeah, that's quite good.
I'll just run through some quick house party facts. There were 166 episodes and 17 specials,
but only one that mattered.
Yep. But get this, it was axed in March 1999 after ratings plummeted from 15 million to 8 million.
Do you want
to
know?
And like any TV show, would kill to have 8 million these days. Yeah, that's insane.
Do you want to know what Noel Edmonds blamed that drop in ratings on?
Brexit.
No. Even more strangely, Ronan Keating.
Like a slice of context with that.
Because Ronan had a show that was preceded Noel's house party, and Edmund's opinion was that it was such a disaster that people didn't stick around for him afterwards.
Was it the Ronan Keating show?
Is that what it was called? I don't know. I can't admit
I'd imagine so, but I can't say I've ever seen it.
Okay, well, there we go. Also, a couple of facts. It won a BAFTA Noel's house party.
Still on
different times.
I'm not saying I was entirely responsible, but and also Gotchas, if anyone remembers the Gotcha section of the show.
Yeah.
They were, according to Wikipedia, originally called Gotcha Oscars until legal action from the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences.
Brilliant. That's pure Partridge, isn't it?
That is
perfect. Love it. Yeah.
Brilliant.
So continuing, because we're kind of still only at the introduction of the episode, really. So Alan meets Glenn at this. Talks through Glenn Ponder and Andy at this point, and describes Glenn as having fingers like a centipede, which I thought was quite an odd description.
Yeah.
And there's also the bit of chat about he was playing Mortal Kombat over Christmas. Now, we've had a few messages from one of our listeners, Michael Brennan, suggesting that's an error in the story because Alan says he was playing Mortal Kombat with his nephew. So, question to the group, is Michael right? Does that mean it's an error? Is that Alan being an unreliable narrator because, as far as we're aware, he's an only child, but maybe he's not? Or is it just that it's a sibling of Carol's and Alan's never mentioned him before? Which one do we think that is?
He's embellishing for a joke, isn't he?
I think that's the joke.
Yeah, there we go. That's the joke.
I think it's fine.
There we go.
So there we go. Just Michael Brennan has messaged us about three times about that, so I thought we should.
He is
that's clearly
adamant,
up, Michael.
Unless if he's here.
Is he here tonight?
Emailing us.
Oh, he's not adamant enough to buy a ticket.
Yeah, no, just email.
It's a well-rehearsed routine, isn't it? Where Alan says, "Oh, it's very pleasant, apart from on Boxing Day when I cut a man's head off and put it on a spike."
Yeah.
And Glenn says, "Really, Alan? Yes, I was playing Mortal Kombat on my nephew's video game."
Yes. And also, Glenn's really hamming that up, that really, Alan. He almost looks at the camera at that point as well, which I thought was quite funny.
There might be some Mortal Kombat experts here. I don't know. It's not for me to say. But I did a bit of research, and I couldn't find a move where you can impale a head on a spike. I found one where you can impale the body. I found one where you can tear the head off, but no head impaling on
it's
spike.
It's an amalgamation, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, maybe that's the joke. He can't remember what he did.
He's got no idea what he's talking about, really, is he?
We come at this point to the first attempt to shoehorn in product placement for Rover.
Yes. That was, Alan says that's what he received for Christmas, doesn't he? Yep.
Sadly, there was nothing in the commentary about this, but I was interested how they got around that with the BBC in real life, because obviously Rover is a product. They are promoting it one way or another.
Yeah, it's genuine product placement, but I guess because it's within the context of that's the joke, it's fine.
Yeah, okay.
It's interesting that obviously Tony Hayes takes issue, and rightly so, with product placement. And this was obviously in 1995, when I imagine product placement was a bit of an alien concept. In 2017, I'm sure we'll all appreciate, though, that it's very much a real thing. So I thought, I've done a bit of research as well.
What?
I know.
You normally don't do anything.
I know.
Shocked silence.
This is what ITV in 2017 defined product placement as. Product placement is where we integrate a brand into the narrative or environment of a programme. This offers a truly unique marketing opportunity as products are showcased within natural settings, more relatable to viewers. That's mainly you. And in turn, providing inspiration or in some cases validation for purchase choices to really make your brand stick in a viewer's mind. It's best to make product placement part of an overall marketing communication strategy. That's product placement in 2017.
It's now legal and allowed.
Yep. I feel quite dirty just hearing that.
Yeah,
but thankfully, this delicious Radnor spring water is really happy to rinse it away. He's talking to Glenn and Andy about their Christmas plans. Andy is obviously Glenn's partner, which Alan is visibly wrunkled and uncomfortable about.
He's not a fan, and in iPartridge he claims he doesn't remember Andy's name as well quite a few times.
I've got some very interesting stuff about the guy who played Andy, if anyone's interested. If anyone's heard our latest episode, you'll know that occasionally we get legally worried, and for a similar reason I'm going to read this verbatim as it was on Wikipedia.
Oh God.
In 1999, London-based radio station XFM was fined £50,000 by Ofcom, at the time the largest fine levied by the authority, following complaints regarding the use of coarse sexual innuendo when discussing a bestial pornography video with a listener during the Tom Binns breakfast show. Parent company Capital Radio decided not to sack Binns, but in a meeting shortly after the fine was issued, the radio authority made it clear to Capital Radio that this would negatively affect the decision to renew the XFM licence. It doesn't stop there. In December 2009, Binns was fired by BRMB by its owners after he cut short the Queen's Christmas message. The message was played into a show in error instead of the expected 2-minute news bulletin. Binns joked, two words, boring. he then went on. I know, sackable offence.
What, and that didn't go down well?
He then went on to joke that the British monarchy can't be as good for tourism as some people claim because the French executed theirs and people still visit France.
Wow.
And you're telling me he's not on the airwaves anymore?
This sounds like radio gold to me, but I don't know what
would listen. Would listen.
Harry Allen.
Going back to the product placement discussion, obviously Boasters biscuits get quite a lot of mentions during this episode.
Yeah.
Although then, well, Alan, that, as far as we're aware, that's not intentional product placement. But so obviously we had some out in the bar whilst you guys were waiting to come in.
Not that easy to find either.
No, you had a bit of trouble tracking down. I've never actually eaten a Boasters.
Until tonight, I'd never even eaten a Boasters either.
I still haven't. Maybe I'll get one if there's some.
It's been a culinary revelation for all of us.
But did anybody look at the Boasters biscuit website? Because they do have one.
No.
I mean,
no.
As if you wouldn't.
No. I mean, I just liked... There's not much information on the website.
Really?
Apart from there is
really?
There is a very large tagline across the screen that says, "Behold the buttery swagger of the Boasters." It's a biscuit. That's mad. Anyway...
Not even a popular biscuit, is it?
No.
Well, until we bought 16 packets yesterday.
So what you're saying is you're saying that buttery swagger has not been earned.
Yeah, only available in Aldi as well.
Yeah. We're actually in Asda on the rollback.
Okay. Asda, get in touch for a sponsorship.
There we go. Alan introduces Yvette, Martin and Sam at this point, his three Christmas crackers. It's getting a bit tabloidy at this point, I think.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, I mean, they're just three lovely ladies, I guess.
There they are on screen.
Crackers, Alan would like to pull one of them.
And I think on the commentary, this at least one of them, perhaps all of them, weren't actually actresses, but on the commentary they were saying they do listening very well.
That's all they needed to do.
There's potential there.
That's all they needed to do.
And then we're into the Fanny Thomas era.
Yes, played by the actor Kevin Eldon.
Kevin Eldon. There he or she is.
Yeah, a TV chef with a difference. Let's see what she is up to, as we're told in the episode. Let's go to my kitchen, my mock-up kitchen, once again, making it.
Yeah, no, I did think, so when you get over to the kitchen, you've kind of seen all of Alan's mock-up house. So, question to the group, what did we think of Alan's mock-up house?
I mean, it's a lounge in the kitchen.
It's a good point. We only see those two rooms.
Yeah, well, maybe it's only two rooms, but I just thought it just looks very 90s.
Very 90s.
Lots of dark wood and heavy patterns, and it looks pretty bad.
He's got the fan of swords above the fireplace, doesn't he?
Yes, yeah.
There's a nice touch on the commentary where they're talking about whether or not anyone on the commentary has previously played a member of the opposite sex or not. I think it was Armando that said on the commentary that Steve was very proud of the centrefold that he did in the book when he was acting as Pauline Calf. He said to him, this is a quote from Armando, he says, "Those are my breasts. I just pushed them together."
That's nice. That's commitment.
Would you like to know what Alan said about Fanny Thomas in the... Well, this is in Every Ruddy Word. So there's a picture... that's the script book for all the Alan shows. Mm-hmm. There's a picture section in the middle. So there's a picture not too dissimilar from this in that book. And the caption underneath from Alan, written by Alan, reads, "I've never really understood his/her sort, but I recently saw Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. Brilliant film and a real insight into why certain types of gay men... certain types of gay men in makeup like to shout so much." Alan's words, not
ours. Yeah.
Crucial. What a takeaway. Is it worth going through very quickly all of the Fanny Thomas innuendo that we enjoy in this episode?
God, there's loads, isn't there?
There is loads.
Alan, you've caught me with my hand wrapped around an enormous chopper. Do you want stuffing? Yes, please. You don't look the type. More of that later. You'll be lucky. Don't talk with your mouth full. Ooh, reminds me of my boyfriend last night. My spatula's stuck under my flapjack. I bet she takes down your particulars. There's nothing I love more than a hot, spicy stuffing. Help me out by grasping this very firmly and giving the top a good hard tug. It's quite stiff. That's what they all say. Take a big fistful and give it a good stuffing. Further, right up to the neck. And finally, it's rude to point, Alan. Oh, I'm not talking about your finger.
What do you do for an encore?
I've actually got a couple of others. Got put a cork in it. I tried, but it doesn't help. Knock it on the head. I didn't know you were into the rough stuff, and you pulled it out too soon.
Oh, there we go. I did pull it out too soon. There weren't enough. That's a joke.
Well, before we move on to Tony Hayes, my residing question from the first appearance of Fanny Thomas in the show here is, why does she eat an ice cream at the end of this bit?
Yeah, she's eating a cornetto, isn't she?
Yeah,
for no apparent reason.
It's the middle of November.
Maybe
it's Christmas.
Maybe Kevin Eldon's demands were, "I just want a cornetto, please."
And it's so, like, superficial as well, because Fanny says, "Oh, do you want to know what I'm cooking?"
No,
like,
there isn't time.
No, there isn't time. Like, it's superficial.
They spend all the time talking about the
abbreviations.
Yeah, and that they have to cut Zola Bud. Now, question, did anyone else have to Google Zola Bud?
I did. And when I did, I felt a bit ashamed because there's a lot of news and a lot of achievement in the across the life
of Zola
Bud.
I think we might be showing our age there, maybe.
Yeah. Keep it light, Adam.
I would say it's worth looking her up in your own time, but some highlights from her Wikipedia story include the following phrases. 2 junior world records, police-supervised 7-hour gun siege, and finally, on an episode of Celebrity Come Dine With Me, Bud stated that to this day she has never seen footage of the collision. So
wow.
You can fill in the gaps in your own time.
Yeah, so that leaves me with more questions than answers. So should we move on to Tony Hayes?
Hayes chat. There he is. Look at that. What a suit.
So, yeah, I mean, that is the height of fashion in 1995 there, or arguably not. So my first note about this scene was Alan has to move random people off the sofa to get this chat started. So in a real TV show, you would actually have floor managers to do this. So is that just Pear Tree Productions, they're cutting corners again? We don't need a floor manager, just Alan can do it. It's just the worst way to start an interview. Yeah. And then you have a man awkwardly stood behind them, which will be popping up on the screen behind us in a minute. And just in case you...
There he is.
Just in case you're not sure what I'm talking about, I think... There he is.
The lurker.
Yeah, he's behind them for the entire chat, kind of like just looking puzzledly at mince pies. It's ridiculous.
Like that.
Yeah, exactly like that.
So essentially, we've obviously discussed that Tony Hayes is a bit of an odd guest. Why would you have a commissioner? And essentially, why would you have your boss? Like, imagine interviewing your boss on TV. It is,
what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, I mean, obviously...
Sorry, I have a quick question.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you reckon this is Alan's idea or it's Tony's idea to be on the show?
Well, I think obviously Alan wants to use it as a career advantage, but it could be trying to do a bit of a right to reply type thing where we've got one of the top BBC execs to talk about what the BBC is doing.
He's new in the role, isn't he? So maybe it's a chance for him to kind of get in front of the public, talk about what his plans are for the BBC. And to be fair, Alan does kind of go down that route to begin with, although clearly makes it very much about himself and attempts to...
Well, it's all an excuse to beg for that immortal second series, isn't it?
Yeah.
And obviously Hayes shuts him down every step of the way, which is quite enjoyable. And I had another note that Alan just makes a fantastic disgusted look to camera when they start talking about onanism or masturbation. He hates that. He's not a big fan of it.
Yeah, and again, like...
Well, I mean the word, I don't know. Anyway.
but at that point, like the bell ringer or the
Mary.
Mary has come into the fold. And again, that's just like, it's unprofessional. It doesn't make any sense.
But he's doing it because Tony thinks it's a good idea.
But he's not in control of the interview. Kind of Tony's leading it.
Is he ever in control of the interview?
No.
Re the masturbation bit. There's a bit where Alan says...
Always a sentence I like to hear.
That's what the people are here for.
When Alan goes, don't do it then. There's a little twitch in Rebecca Front's mouth. I don't know how she holds it together because that bit is brilliant. Mm. But one thing I did want to say is the live audience, a little bit jarring in this point because there is a woman who is laughing so loudly that kind of jar with the live studio audience.
I think she gets mentioned on the commentary as well.
Does she?
Sticks out to that extent. Yeah. Just a quick thing about David Schneider playing Tony Hares. Post I'm Alan Partridge, he's the longest running character. After Alan, across all Alan material. And David Schneider apparently begged to play him as a ghost in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2. which...
What?
That's just what the commentary says, so I don't know. Maybe we can fact-check that later.
I've watched it with the commentary, and somehow I didn't pick up on that. That just passed me by.
The Tony Hares ghost, come on. Tony seems very at home within Alan's concepts and tries to abbreviate aha, much to Alan's disappointment and disgust.
Yep.
And refers to the bell ringers to make a joke. And I started to think maybe it seems like he understands how this show should run better than Alan, really.
Yeah,
like,
he knows how to make TV programmes, isn't it, as the chief commissioner?
Good point,
the PPC.
Good point. The other note I had for this scene is that Alan refers to when the boat comes in as terrible, which I thought is the second time across Alan shows that he talks about that show.
Wendy Ball
and I actually had no idea what that was. I don't know if anybody else had to Google that at all or if anyone thought to.
I didn't think to, did you?
Nope.
No. So I'd never heard of it, but it is a television period drama produced by the BBC between 76 and 81 about a First World War veteran who returns to his poverty-stricken hometown in the northeast of England, which is obviously why Alan uses it as a reference point to Michael the Geordie in I'm Alan Partridge later on as well.
I did not know
anything about that.
The back and forth of Tony Hares is so awkward as well here, where he's sort of playfully, but not so playfully, asking for the second series. Decisions are made, and I'm made all the time. The decision is pending, etc. It's torturous for poor Alan, isn't it?
It's kind of torturous for everyone watching it, to be fair, as well. And even when, like, you know, they talk about Christmas and what have you been up to this Christmas, Tony? And to the point where he obviously kind of, you know, says he doesn't go to midnight mass because he's a Jew. Alan is completely derailed by that comment, literally, and just falls back on, like, you can just see his brain thinking, Jews are good. Thinking that will kind of just that will smooth it over. Let's move on to the next thing. And this isn't like they keep talking about religion, and you know this is clearly not what they should be talking about. Where Alan starts, proclaiming that he knows what God is. We all know what God is, right? Yeah. So apparently,
it's a gas.
Well, yeah, not like Caligas.
oh God, no! It's not like Caligas. I've got something about questions of the group. Do you believe in God? Who is she? They?
It's a gas. I'm not going to get bogged down into that whole vibe. Yeah.
It's Christmas.
At this point, there's someone at the door.
Oh, who could that be?
perhaps only because Alan's been calling into his head mic for Santa for about 10 seconds before the doorbell rings. And then he's like, oh, let's see who it is. And so Santa, for starters, massively overdoes the ho-ho-hos. 10 seconds in, he's identified himself as a shit Santa. And he also, I think he identifies himself as Mike Taylor of the Norfolk Rover Dealer Network. Now, this is problematic for a lot of reasons. I'm not saying that this is a show made for children to watch, but if you come on as Santa and immediately say that you're the head of a Rover dealership, that's destroying Christmas for a lot of kids, isn't it?
It's a very good point. Although they should probably be in bed at this time whenever this TX. Yeah,
that's very true.
I do think, though, like for all his failings, Mike had energy, enthusiasm, and optimism. Yeah, and I actually thought he was one of the better things about the show, to be honest.
Did he make you believe in Santa?
Although this bit is... Yeah. This bit is a little bit weak. I think it's mostly there just obviously for the setup for later, really, isn't it?
And also you've got this section, so Alan kind of introduces a few other background guests after this happens. So he mentions his local WPC, and then Fanny makes a joke, I bet she takes down your particulars. So I thought, so Alan responds to that saying, that's tiresome, but yet he actually uses that line himself in I'm Alan Partridge Series 2 when he's hosting Crash Bang Wallop What a Video. he's gone, that's tiresome, I'm actually going to
use that. He's got previous, hasn't he, in terms of hearing things from other people, being nonplussed, and then using them to impress others. There's that whole thing in I'm Alan Partridge about Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster. There's a bit where I think it's in Alpha Papa where Lynn quotes from the Bible and then Alan uses it later. He's often, you know,
he uses
cherry picking knowledge.
Michael teaches him like the move and fire and move and fire bit that he repurposes for an afternoon with Alan Partridge and Sue Cook.
The question I had though was, how did she get an invite though? He says at the very beginning of the show that he was broken into six times.
She should be patrolling outside of Johnny House.
The streets.
Very good point. Very good point. And then we also meet Alan's driver, who you can see behind us on the screen there. Obviously, a bit of an Alan clone. He's listed simply as Alan 2 in the script. They don't even bother thinking of a surname or anything like that. I just thought, you know, obviously, I know this is the joke. He's dressed exactly like Alan would be. And then we move on to Alan's 36-inch TV.
He's going to take lovely Queen Anne cabinet.
Yep. I just thought it looks so dated when you see that. It's ridiculous.
It's a lovely visual gag though. This where he goes to put on a video of Christmas in Norwich, and you see he's still jamming it into the VCR when the clip starts playing. Yep. Lovely bit. And then we're on to the Christmas in Norwich.
Norwich.
City of Mustard, as we're immediately reminded.
City of Mustard and shoes, and also amazing running gear there. So I thought, before we delve into the Christmas in Norwich section, which is one of my favourite bits of the show.
Oh, yes.
Question to the group. Has anyone ever been to Norwich? I haven't even visited, to be honest. So
I have. It's very nice. It's lovely. Yeah.
Can't say I have, I'm afraid.
I have been to Norwich, yes.
And What went on?
I went on, I think we've talked about it before on the podcast, but I went on an Alan Partridge-themed podcast pilgrimage to Norwich.
Podcast pilgrimage?
Did I say podcast?
Yeah.
Stag do.
He went on a stag do. I just want to can't stress
just
that enough.
Just colour that in for me. Yeah, I went on a stag do.
We'll edit that. It's fine.
You were briefly mindless,
Jed.
Can you make a note, Jed?
Yeah, make a note of that, Jed.
Jed, it point.
So I think we've got a short video clip of some of the things I got up to, which I think I'm just going to briefly narrate.
Yep.
So,
yep.
Jed, can we
run VT, Jed?
Roll VT.
There it is.
There we go. So what you're seeing here is just some of the things that we ticked off the list. So this was my friend Rich. It was his stag do. It was actually his second stag do. The first wedding, first one didn't work out.
Is that actually not a joke?
That's not a joke. The first one was in Alton Towers. But anyway, the second stag do was in Norwich. So this is very much running around the cloisters of Norwich. He had a head mic on, obviously the shorts. He's eating the mustard.
We've seen his nipples.
That's me. I was dressed as Michael. That's ticking the box, jumping on the bed. Chocolate mousse on the face. We also went on the We also went on the Norfolk Broads, feeding beef burgers to swans. Just ticking all the boxes, really.
Is that cruel? Should you feed beef burgers to swans? I don't know.
No. It's fat keeps them afloat.
Okay, great. It just works. Yeah, it's fine.
We stayed in the local travel tavern. So I'd highly recommend it. If you are thinking about getting married, why not consider a stag do in Norwich? If you want to see the whole thing, it is on YouTube.
And on that Norwich-based bombshell, that's the end of part one of our Knowing Me, Knowing Yule special, recorded in front of a live audience at London's Prince Charles Cinema last month. A massive thank you to everyone that bought a ticket and came down. We hope you had as much fun as we did celebrating Alan's Christmas special. We've decided to split the Yule section of the night into two parts, like a giant novelty cracker, just to make it a bit more digestible. Part two is also available to download now, so make sure you carry on listening. Next week, we'll be back with the interview with Simon Greenall, which you won't want to miss if you couldn't make it on the night. Simon was a great sport and extremely funny, so a big thank you to him too. And now, head over to part two. We'll see you there.
Monkey Tennis?
It's Knowing Me, Knowing You with Alan Partridge.
And Christ.
Monkey Tennis?
Please don't take my chat away from me.
The cracker's on fire! Aboard the pole!
Monkey tennis.
My house is open, my mock-up house.
Monkey tennis.
That is a very nice action.
Oh, pardon.
Monkey tennis.
300k. 300k all it takes is a sky.
3 years ago, hobnobs were probably the number one biscuit.
Ho, ho, ho!
Monkey tennis.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.